This is Chasing Wisdom, your source for conversation and serious ideas for those striving to become wiser leaders in business. Your host is Dr. Sam Serto. Sam is the Steinmetz Professor of Management in the Graduate School of Business at Rollins College in Winter Park, Florida. He also serves as a leader at Northland, a church distributed, located in Central Florida. Along with leaders from various fields, our goal is to provide practical wisdom for those navigating real-world business challenges. Welcome to this conversation about how to become a wiser leader in business, Bible, and life.
Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Sam Serto, and you're listening to the Chasing Wisdom podcast. Here, leaders talk about business, Bible, and life to help all of us become wiser leaders. Today, our guest is Dr. Des Cummings. Des is president of Florida Hospital Foundation. He holds a PhD degree from Andrews University in leadership and management with emphasis in statistical forecasting. He also holds a Master's of Divinity degree and is an ordained minister of the Seventh-day Adventist Church. Des is clearly committed to advancing the healing ministry of Christ in the 21st century through health and healing strategies that treat the mind, body, and spirit. Motivated by this vision, Des gave leadership to the development of Celebration Health, a showcase hospital in the Walt Disney City of Celebration, Florida. This facility has attracted national and international attention as a model of health and healing in the 21st century. Dr. Cummings has authored or co-authored three books and numerous articles around his belief that we must recreate a new vision of American healthcare for the 21st century that is financially viable and enhances the quality of life for all Americans. Des, it's great to have you here today.
Good to be with you, Sam.
Well, awesome. Before we get started, I want to congratulate you on an award you received from John Maxwell, the John Maxwell Health and Wellness Leadership Award. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, John Maxwell was kind enough to recognize me in his award system of for leadership in health and wellness, and that's just a national award that John does every year.
When you think about Celebration and your role in that hospital, it must bring fond memories for you.
Absolutely. I still live in Celebration community, and the hospital is still a daily visit.
When you think about your accomplishments there, even The Economist has made a statement about what you have done there, what that hospital is.
Yeah, The Economist came out with an article in their December 24th edition for 2016 stating that the hospital was the one aspect of the community that superseded all expectations. So we were really blessed by that statement and the fact that it is a Christian institution with uniquely and explicitly biblical symbols throughout, really is a statement that, God's ideas win.
Terrific. Okay, we have people who are listening who are interested in you as a leader and the things that you do as a leader, and they try to gain insights for their organizational positions, given what you have been through. Maybe the first thing we should do is talk a little bit about Florida Hospital Foundation. I'm not sure that people know what that foundation is and how it relates.
So the Florida Hospital Foundation is a one of the top 25 performing foundations in the healthcare and nationally, according to the benchmark organization of Health Management Academy. And it really, every year here in Orlando, raises about $21 million for the advancement of health and healing within the Florida hospital system. But the key factor that drives it is really the mission. And I always tell people from the very beginning that I felt like philanthropy needed to be treated as like a ministry. And I always say to people, I'm not here to twist your arm, I'm here to touch your heart. Because inevitably somebody says, I could never do what you do. And I say, really? The fact is, once you find out where the people's heart is and you help them follow their heart, it becomes a joy for all parties. If you're taking them to your agenda and trying to make sure that you pressurize them into your agenda, it's going to be hard work.
And actually, you turn out to be helping people to do what they'd like to do.
Absolutely. I think one of the greatest concerns we have for our nation is that basically we cannot find ourselves stuck in this self-centered environment. The more we have self at the center versus service to others, the more we shrink the hearts of our people. And I think that that's the greatest danger of America, is shrinking the hearts instead of enlarging the hearts. And that's why I love mission trips, because it enlarges the hearts of people.
So when we think about Florida Hospital, and this is sort of a conduit of funds for Florida Hospital, and we're looking at a system of about 20 hospitals, 20, 24 hospitals?
We have 24 hospitals across Central Florida.
Okay.
And my responsibility is the philanthropic activity.
The thing that made me smile when I read some of your notes that you afforded me for preparation, you talked about the I-4 corridor.
Yes.
And I'm really not used to hearing about the I-4 corridor unless it has to do with presidential politics. So I'll have a better way to think about the I-4 corridor now.
We hope it has to do with Christian healthcare.
Yes, yes. So when we think about Florida Hospital, and you mentioned mission.
Yes.
And mission is built around creation ministry.
Absolutely. When we really looked at the original calling of the Adventist Health System, it came out of the founding of the church, because our leaders actually went through a period of time where they were suffering from poor health. The president of our church had a series of mini strokes.
Oh.
They took him to the doctors of the day, and he was in the 1860s, and they offered him bleeding, leaching, drugging. And his wife said, no, we're not going to go there. We're going to go back to Scripture and find the model of health and apply it to his life. They did that, and within 18 months, he was back to health. Now, at age 35 in those days, with life expectancy being 40,
mm-hmm.
A lot of people were saying, well, this is the beginning of the end. It wasn't the beginning of the end for him. He lived on to his late 60s. So he really said, when he came back to work, they said, you're ready to run the church again. He said, no, I want to start hospitals. And so he declared, along with his wife, that we would be in the ministry of two dimensions: the gospel of salvation and the gospel of health.
When we think about creation ministry, as you describe it, it has to do with rest and trust and interpersonal relationships, all coming through Genesis,
exactly.
in a focused, concerted way. And when you think about hospitals, it's easy to think about healing in that area and how your focus should be on healing. Your PhD is in the area of management.
Yes.
And you're an organizational scientist. And can you make the transition from the hospital to the person who's listening right now, who's in the construction business? And do these things about rest, interpersonal relations, trust, are they part of the healing for employees and organization members?
Yeah, we like to say that the answer is absolutely yes, because God touched the world twice. The first time he touched it was with the plan of health in the creation story. These eight principles that make up the word creation all come from the Genesis story of the Garden of Eden. So choice being center stage with the two trees, and obviously being available to all human as the freedom of choice, rest being key to the time with God, and him taking a day apart to be with his children. We like to say it's the first Father's Day. And then you have the whole idea of environment. Well, he spent 5 days just shaping the environment, and so it really shows you what God's intent was. We like to say you were made for a garden, but after sin, you now live in a jungle. And so how do we actually take the garden principles into the jungle environment, which is, I think, behind your question of how do we take this from a healing situation into a contractor or other business environments? The beauty of this is a secret for the way God made humans to thrive, and therefore it works across all humanity in all situations.
So it's generalizable across all organizations, across all human living.
Absolutely.
We have a feature called Sunday to Monday, Des, in each one of the podcasts, and it has to do with something you might hear on a Sunday, a verse, and then you would take that idea into your organizational life. Most people are living in organizations, working and helping in service kinds of ways, volunteer missions. Let me give you this verse from Genesis, which is very much consistent with what we're doing here and talks about the idea of rest, and see if this has to do with moving in the way that you're talking. Genesis 2:2. By the seventh day, God completed his work, which he had done, and he rested on the seventh day from all his work, which he had done. Do you need rest in organizations?
Absolutely. You know, the sign of health, if you look on a monitor, is always a wave. It has a stress-rest rhythm.
Mm-hmm.
And so there is 6 days that God said you work, seventh day you rest. So he patterned that into the creation model, and it actually, you see it through whether you measure respiratory, brain waves, heart, all of these things are evidence of that. And oftentimes the symbol of death is a flat line. I always say to business people, the first thing you need to do is understand the 50-minute hour, and that is give yourself 10 minutes of rest after you start into your hour. Schedule it in so that you have time to recollect yourself, to put to an end all the to-do things that came up in the last meeting and get yourself ready for the next one, to recenter yourself and your goals. There is a rhythm of life, and this is what that rest is all about. I always like to look at the creation story and say, you know, I see that in 6 days God created life, and on the seventh day God created love. We need time for love to actually work, and the essence of rest is love.
So if you're managing a Starbucks coffee shop and you see that somebody might not be making coffee or making product, arranging product, doing things that are naturally needing to be done in that store, there are times when people who are not doing anything are really recuperating. And so many of our work days have scheduled rest periods in them for good reason.
Yes.
And the notion is that you're recharging in order to get things done, and you're saying that's biblical.
Absolutely biblical. I think the thing that is challenging for us is oftentimes people who are resting are not really recharging, but they're just emptying out. So that's the idea of vacation. Vacation is just to vacate and empty out. But really what rest does is set aside busyness in order to absorb meaning in the mind, body, and spirit, and that's what recharges you. So the whole idea of just stopping work doesn't get you much unless you're filling up that with a renewed spirit, mind, and body.
So wise leaders are creating environments where you stop and recharge and fill up again.
Absolutely. It's the filling is just as important as the stopping.
You like to talk about matching God's ideas with market needs. The reason I like to talk to you so much is that you're the personification of what this podcast is all about. It's Bible and business.
Yeah.
And you, by background and experience, are Bible and business.
Yes, absolutely.
So what do you mean by that statement, creating value, matching God's ideas with markets?
Well, I found that in my work, especially with celebration, that if I took God's ideas and really looked at what they could produce in the contemporary environment, I was suddenly creating value from the very core of the beginning of the idea. My tendency in the past has been to take my ideas and then ask God to bless them. So, or you kind of do business and then you start with a prayer and you close with a hope and thinking, well, that has been a spiritual business decision. It really wasn't. So I like to have God's ideas at the very core driving the value proposition, because I believe God creates the greatest value for humanity. And when you create value, then the revenue flows into that value creation. And so when I have a financial problem, it's usually because I'm not creating enough value. And if I'm not creating enough value, the ideas aren't right. And if the ideas aren't right, instead of going to the gurus first, you go to God first and then match the gurus as a contemporary bridge to relevance of God's ideas.
So Jesus becomes the role model for how you act in organizations.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I think that the thing we're finding above all is that the one thing that a computer cannot commoditize is the relational, is love. That you can't account for it in accounting.
Mm-hmm.
You can't commoditize it in the digits. It is always going to be created in interpersonal. And that's the lasting and greatest need that humanity has and the greatest value.
How would you like to be described in terms of your leadership style with the people that work with you?
Well, you know, I love the whole idea that Scripture says, where there is no vision, the people perish.
Mm-hmm.
I like the reverse of that, which where there is vision, the people thrive. And I think that that's really, to me, the essence of how do you see your world through God's eyes? So the definition that I have for wisdom is looking at your world through God's eyes. And that really changes everything. And to me, it is how do I bring a spiritual leadership at its core that is vision-driven by God's values and relevant to human needs today?
When you look at the idea of learning, and I know there's a quote that you like, and that quote is, as you learn more and more how God works, you'll learn more and more about how to do your work.
Amen.
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 The perfect ending, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. When we think about the ending of a podcast, we try to come up with a pearl of wisdom. And that pearl of wisdom has to do with a practical, thoughtful idea that somebody who is listening might be able to remember easily and to apply in a pragmatic way. As you think about that, Des, what would that pearl of wisdom be?
Probably one of the most important questions I was ever asked by a boss was in preparation to go into a situation where we had to separate an employment of a gentleman who was working with us who had made a financial error. In fact, more than an error, he had committed a crime financially, and he was going to be arrested and a number of things. Before we went into that meeting, I was really frustrated because I had hired this guy. I had invested in him. I had brought him to vice president level, and now it didn't work, and I was angry at him. My president turned to me and said, Des, how can we discipline him without diminishing him? That has become a penetrating question for me because I think it's an ideal that I often don't strive for. I often protect the company, protect my reputation, protect the vulnerability of what we're trying to do as a team. But what happened in that moment was we talked with that man and there were limited things you can do when somebody has done something that's going to have legal implications. But my president, Tom Warner, turned around and said to him, we believe that every situation can be learning, and we believe you and your family can have a stronger life. And that's why I want to give you the opportunity to have some Christian counseling. And so he invested in that man, Christian counseling, and his wife. And I think that that was one of the most redemptive thing that came out of that situation. So in discipline, I have to seek redemption and ask the question, how do I discipline without diminishing?
And when you think about the diminishing, you're talking about the character, not the, necessarily the character of the person, but the feelings that the person leaves with.
Their self-worth. If you look at what is attacked, that self-worth gets attacked. And with a sense of making a mistake that's undeniable, my responsibility, it often attacks the spirit of the person most deeply. They can recover from some of the other issues, but the spirit is one thing you have to be is sacred, and that's what we need to protect.
Most of us will not be in a situation that's that extreme.
Yes.
If you're in a situation that's of lesser extreme, maybe somebody's coming in late,
right.
Maybe somebody is not producing quality product, but they're at the job place, and how do you build their dignity at the same time?
So I think that the question works across the spectrum, because even in that situation, I have to work with that person in a way that will be redemptive, that will actually redeem the moment. So they're wasting the moment. They're wasting their own energy. They're wasting the company's resources. They're wasting the opportunity. There's loss on all fronts. And what I have the opportunity to do is share with them that they can make that moment an eternal moment if they put themselves fully into it. So I always ask people, you know, how much have you really lived your life? How much have you been fully alive? Because when you're fully invested, mind, body, and spirit, when you're doing something that you feel like God has called you to, it changes a task to a ministry. It changes a job to an opportunity.
And when you think about the appraisal discussion, most people go away thinking that they're being reprimanded. Excellent. And in this kind of a circumstance, we're saying that you're pointing out perhaps some of the things that need to be changed, but protecting the self-worth of that person, saying there's nothing that you can't do here necessarily.
Right.
It's just we're trying to point out as you move forward. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And sometimes in that situation, I'll ask them to come up with a solution, because it's in the solution process that I want their investment. And when I try to tell them what the solution is, they often resist it. And then I find myself getting frustrated with them, and then we go into this circle of diminishing.
I find myself getting frustrated here because our time is up. And I'm sorry for that. But Des, thank you so much for being here today. You can find Des, any of the listeners can find Des with the email address. Let me just spell it, des.cumminges@flhosp.org. Thanks to all of you for being here on Wisdom Wednesday. You can keep in touch with me on Facebook at chasing.wisdom or my website, chasewisdom.com. From discussion on page 193 of my book, Chasing Wisdom, today's final thought to help you become a wiser leader is: actively clarify another's message before internalizing it. If you do this, you'll be surprised at what happens. I'll see you next Wednesday. In the meantime, keep chasing. God bless.
You've been listening to Chasing Wisdom with host Dr. Sam Serto. We would love to hear from you regarding this podcast. You can reach us at northlandchurch.net/chasingwisdom. We will be here each Wednesday with a fresh look at being a wiser leader in business, Bible, and life. Want to reach out to Dr. Serto? Email him at sserto@rollins.edu.